This program is underwritten by the Greater Haines Chamber of Commerce, advocating for a supportive business community.
The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors and staff of Lynn Canal Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. And good morning. You're listening to Art Matters on KHNS, and I'm here with Heather Lundy. Hello, Heather.
Good morning, Margaret. A beautiful April day.
It is lovely.
And I'm excited. We've got a good show, I think. Another First Friday. They come around so fast. Is that is that just me, or do you feel like
yeah,
the
it's
first
you.
Of
no,
the...
No, we didn't have an Art Matters last month because it came around so fast.
But we had one somewhere, didn't we?
We did in January.
We didn't. No. Well, anyway, yeah. we'll go.
Or we had one in February, but not March. That's what it was. We didn't have one last month. But this month, yeah, now she's looking confused.
Which is so, my general state of being.
No, well, this show, yeah, we're going to go over a few things happening for First Friday. It's the first Friday of spring. And there's some new places opening. There's some new and existing eateries opening. Like, everything's just kind of blossoming opening. And who else are you going to talk to this hour? We're going to talk about the economy of art.
Yes, we have Carol Tyneman from the Arts Confluence to talk a little bit about the economy of art in small communities, in Haines mm-hmm. in particular. And also Laura Rogers, local artist who has a brand new gallery, to talk about that a little bit. She's going into her second season, so not brand new. And then our reader. I'm bringing back my reader feature.
Oh, your reader feature.
I love talking to people who read and about what kind books. Of books they read. And mm-hmm. because this is a show that focuses on the economy, I thought I'd ask Tracy Harmon from
Perfect.
The Chamber of Commerce, even though she's not going to be talking about the economy. She's just going to be talking about whatever it is she reads.
Okay.
But it's just a tangential connection there.
Got it.
And Tresham Gregg, who's a longtime art gallery owner and has made a living as an artist for many, many years and owns the most galleries in Haines with three.
That's true.
So he's going to talk about his experience with the art economy and making a living that way here. And then we're going over to Skagway.
Yep, we're checking in with Skagway about the upcoming Spring Festival, which includes an art show of all the art made over the winter. That's how they celebrate. And the Skagway Folk Festival. That's coming up, I think, in 2 weekends. So they're going to give us a preview of the Spring Festival for Skagway.
So we better get going. We got a lot to talk about.
We'll
today,
be right back with Carol Tyneman.
Okay.
Okay, just a quick break there. Hi, Carol.
Good morning.
How are you doing?
It's great to be here. I'm fine on this beautiful spring day.
It is gorgeous.
So, Carol, summarize. You did or were part of spearheading a survey of the arts economy. Is that the correct way to say it?
Actually, the survey was on community engagement, but I have a survey here from 2013 of both the Southeast Alaska arts economy and the arts economy in Haines. And the figures are quite substantial and impressive. Starting with the Southeast in general, $57.8 million was generated by spendings of artists, arts organizations, and audiences in 2013. Since then, there's been a tremendous boost, all kinds of activities going on throughout mm-hmm. Southeast. Artists alone have generated $29.9 million in their own fees and payments during that period. And in Haines, although it's much smaller, of course, we're a small population, the arts in 2013 generated $2.1 million by Haines artists, organizations, and audiences. And we have a really large percentage of artists. We have the most artists per capita of any county under 10,000 in the country. And for every artist in the U.S., we have 2.8 artists. So we're really strong in that. And 80 artists generate part of their income from the arts.
Well, and I'm just thinking 2013 for some artists is, you know, whole projects ago. Like, there's been a lot since then. I've had, another book come out in those in that time. And I'm thinking of the big school art projects that some of the local artists have done, or public art that, that the Arts Confluence has worked with, or even new galleries opening and new artists moving here, or really amping up their presence online or in area shops or whatever. There's a lot that's happened in those 5 years.
Right. And Ray Costell put this information together, and we'd like to have them do another study. We're estimating that the figures are nearer to $3 million just for the Haines area, because there has been such an increase in activity. It would be great to see what the comparison is with 2013 to last year or this year.
And now, Carolyn, the ongoing your ongoing efforts to promote the arts in Haines, is there something more that's coming up now?
Well, there's so much coming up. I don't know if we can get to it all. But we're having a studio art crawl to give the people of Haines an inside view of some of the studios of artists that have never been visited before. We're asking for the local community to step out and learn more about the arts in this venue. And it'll be April 28th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and tickets will be available at Babbling Book and at the Arts Confluence office on Main Street. That's really exciting, because this has never been done in Haines before, as far as we know, at least not in the last couple of decades.
Everybody's going to be fast and furiously cleaning their spaces to get ready for the public eye on them.
Well, I think they've been ready for some time, because artists are always being productive.
That's true.
And it's called the Magical Mystery Tour, and that's because we're not telling anybody where the where they're going to be going. And we'll have a map, and they'll come to the art gallery on Main Street on the 28th, and we will direct them to all the opportunities that they have. And I think they're going to be, the public will really be impressed with what they're able to see.
Now, how can an artist who may not be in your loop get in touch with you? Because there could be somebody that has a studio that's doing things that you, that is it possible that you might not know about?
There are new artists coming to our attention every day, and for the, about the last 2.5 years, we've been putting together an artist directory. We have over 100 artists with all their contact information and what their interests are, if they want to be an art on Main Street and one of the windows, if they want to participate in First Friday. We've collected that data, and we're going to be releasing that selectively and celebrating that in May. We want to thank all of our sponsors and all the artists who participate in this. So, yes, there are more artists, and we actually sent out a call to about 80 artists when we first started organizing this studio crawl, and the ones that are participating are the ones that are available at this time.
Now, Carol, you've worked with arts organizations from New York to South Carolina to Alaska and back in creating sort of vital communities, both economically and culturally and socially. What's the underlying value, do you think, of an arts economy for a community?
I think the thread that runs true in every economic development activity, whether it's with the arts or not, is recognition and respect. I think that by recognizing the artists, putting the art in this situation in windows, putting it in a sculpture garden, having them involved in making decisions about how arts are promoted in our community, that generates a broad network of interest that goes beyond the artists. And that's basically the MO that I've operated in since I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. So, and Haines, you think we're getting there?
I think Haines is already there. Some people don't recognize it.
All right. Well, we're going to talk to a couple more people today who may agree with you on that. And thank you very much for coming in, and thank you for all your work. And we'll make sure we announce all the First Friday stuff coming up.
Thank you very
much. Okay. Thanks, Carol. Oh, our next guest is Laura Rogers, who owns the Magpie Gallery on, what is it, 2nd Avenue. Is that right? 2nd Avenue over there by Dr. Kierstead's old office and the
Visitor Center,
a couple of guides,
Sarah
Paul's
J's.
Flying Service, Sarah J's. Yes. So you're down over there. And Laura, before we start chatting, please introduce yourself.
I'm Laura Rogers, and I run the Magpie. And last year was my first year of business. And how I got there is I have a background in the arts. I actually am from Scotland, and I went to a Scottish art school, did ceramics there, but immigrated to the U.S. and straight to Haynes, actually, and didn't have a clay studio, so started to dabble in different things, which led me to graphic design, actually. Which then led me to Heather Shade and Sean Copeland at Port Chilcot's Distillery, where we designed the labels. And so since then, I've been doing logos for the Hammer Museum and El Red Rock Lighthouse Preservation and Hark T-shirt. We did something like that, which got me all into this world of graphic design, away from ceramics, which I want to get back to. And I started my own little company called Due North Stationery, where I've been making all the stationery, which I stock at the Magpie. So it kind of all connected that way. And that led me to in contact with lots of other local artists mm-hmm. and makers. And that's what I've been doing.
Wow. So you're, I'm quite familiar, maybe too familiar with your labels. They're beautiful.
Thank you.
You know, the 50 Fathoms gin and they're just beautiful.
Thank you so much.
And they're notable when I think that people look and think, wow, you know, and I assumed, I think obviously wrongly that they must, when I first saw them, they must come from some, you know, Heather and Sean got some firm in Seattle or something to come up with these. And now I knew that you did them, but now I'm hearing that you're relatively self-taught at this.
I am self-taught. And it actually was that, I mean, I had done a little bit in the past. I had helped friends in Scotland with like a record album. And so I had a little bit of background, and it was actually my husband, Manuel, who Heather had said, do you know any graphic designers? And he said, yeah, my wife. so he threw me into that. But it was great working with those guys because they had a very clear vision and they have a great, I think, aesthetic. So we were able to work together. It did take time, and it was a real learning process for me to learn how to do that and put it together.
So, I mean, graphic design, something like labels
right.
or, as you say, logos for different organizations, nonprofit or for profit. I mean, that really falls right into the economics of art. I mean, it's using art to help sell another
right.
product.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
And so what then for you as an artist, what makes a label simply not just an advertisement and a piece of art? And how do you go about the process of then deciding on the creative aspect as well as the actual practical aspect of it?
Well, I think we always go for an authentic. I do it, I think, because I am not a trained graphic designer. I come as an artist, so I do a lot of work myself with sketching, and it's not just a computer process. So there's a kind of, we try to make it authentic. You know, it's not just a straight, I don't know, computerized image.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's made up of many layers of drawing, and so that I would hope is kind of what draws mm-hmm. people in a bit more. It has a bit more of a story.
Uh-huh. So it's almost a story.
Yeah, I think so. And it definitely, and working with the people like Sean and Heather, it's kind of like telling their story. You know, there was a lot of work and history even to the Port Chilcot Distillery, the building, and it was kind of like reflecting that.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's where we came from.
So then as a graphic designer, then you really, do you think then that you really can judge a book by its cover or a gin by its label?
It's kind of the introduction. It's kind of like trying to say, you know, it's a presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hello and have a look at me. Have a try, you know, and see what you think. And then, of course, you know.
Now, some people might think, well, gee, if you're doing things like the labeling and being in charge of your own time and your own employment and all of that, that opening a gallery is kind of a risky operation. What made you decide to add that to a relatively busy plate?
I think because I could see there was opportunity in Haynes to do that. There was me and myself with my stationery. I knew I wanted to present that in a certain way, again, going back to presentation. And also that I knew many other artists that work wasn't in the community yet. And I thought, well, fantastic. Why don't we all put it together and, keep on promoting this local art in Haynes? Mm-hmm. And having a gallery is fantastic because I get to orchestrate that.
Do you think that that the arts economy in this way might be a little different in some ways than a traditional one, in that that artists collaborate more and don't see necessarily each other as competition? I mean, you're bringing other artists into your gallery. It's not all the art that you have. Your exhibits, I know you've had Vanessa Salmon's weavings. You bring other people in. And is what's kind of the philosophy behind that?
Well, I would say having had this first year in the Magpie and that the second year, that's my focus, is that collaboration. I think taking that competition out of it, I don't know how much that exists in Haynes. I haven't seen it myself, but certainly collaborating and really pushing each other forward. I know I've had friends come in who have done photography, but they're not professional. They don't know how to put together. Maybe they want to do a postcard or they want to do a greeting card. They have no idea. I've done it, so I say, oh, let's work together, and then people who haven't got that background in the arts are actually pushing themselves forward and creating, and so it's creating more and more artists just by artists themselves sharing.
Now, do you see, having lived in other places and been involved in the arts there, do you see Haynes arts economy, if you even can judge it, I suppose, as being sort of fledgling or middle-aged or maturing?
Maturing, I think, just hearing Carol Timon talk about the art crawl there is fantastic, because actually my husband and I lived in a little Scottish fishing village, which was very small, very similar to Haynes, although we have obviously lots of neighbouring. Mm-hmm. And they had this art festival, which was very much like the art crawl, where you could visit people in their studio. Mm-hmm. And it became from small to huge. People would come from all over to go and visit, and they could buy the artwork that was shown in the studio or people's houses. You just basically got to visit.
Because some of us, our studios are just sort of on the landing or something.
Right,
necessarily. And a quaint little building out back.
No, and that was kind of the joy, that you kind of got to poke around and see, other people's lives and while maybe purchasing some art. And then that, of course, brought in, there was then food for sale in the streets, and then there was music in the streets, and then it ended actually with a huge fireworks display. So it was really
fun.
Yes, it was fantastic. And I've always thought of that and thought, oh wow, Haynes, it's a little harder because things are a little stretched out and the landscape.
Our bike race started with, 50 or 60 people riding the bike. The Buckwheat Ski Classic in Skagway started with a handful of people getting kind of a wild hair about doing something like that, and they've become huge regional events, the beer festival. So I know there are some people that are thinking, gee, we really could use another festival of sorts and something in the spring, and maybe this is the beginning of it.
Wonderful, yeah. And so that's why, I think it's definitely maturing, and just seeing that there are these people that are passionate, and like Carol and many other people working very hard to, keep on promoting the arts. And I think that circle is getting bigger and bigger. Mm-hmm. More people are getting excited about it.
Okay, so since we've got you here, before we wind up, how about tell us a little about your gallery and what people can expect to go there and what your hours are, anything you'd like to say.
Sure. So for this April, I'm going to start a little slowly. I'm open 2 days a week on Friday and Saturdays, but May I will start opening as my little building gets warmer. And and we, I have 11 different artists, actually, from Haines, local artists in there. And we're ranging from photography with Vanessa Salmon's, obviously, textiles. And I've got Jenny Reitz's candles, and she makes bath salts. So we have a huge range of different things. I've got
even gifts, art,
all over the place. Mm-hmm. And all, you know, people's, yeah, different things that they're making at their homes and bringing in. And it's beautiful. And really, I'm always surprised at how professional, you know, the presentation and everything is.
Mm-hmm. And now if someone's looking to purchase some of your graphic designs,
yeah.
I've seen a card recently. I received one that had your Stellar J.
Wonderful.
Oh, it was just beautiful. And I looked and I was like, hey, I know her.
Yes, there I am. Yes, no, that's all stocked. I try to keep that going and stocked in the gallery. And so, yeah, that's the place to find it.
And any new labels being designed?
There are always labels. There are many different labels going on. Probably can't, because it will be a surprise when it comes out.
But it's a secret.
It is. It's a secret.
Well, Laura, thank you very much for coming
you,
in.
Laura.
It was great to talk to you. And again, gallery will be open. Will be open this first Friday?
It will be first Friday. It'll be open, and I'll be open all the way through the year for the first Fridays.
Right. And I understand also this is if people are thinking, well, it's a little bit around the corner from Main Street, but I hear that Sarah Jay's is going to be open first Friday. So
absolutely.
She's going to be having some samples of her wares. So
you
can get
really
a snack.
Good.
You can get fortified and go past Sarah Jay's and then move on down to the Magpie.
Yeah, absolutely. Come on in.
And the weather will be great.
Always. Always. Okay.
Thanks, Laura.
All right.
Yeah,
thank you very much, Laura. Thanks for coming in.
Okay, well, speaking of First Friday, Heather, we want to do a little rundown of what's
happening.
A little rundown
of First Friday. Well, Margaret,
can you read my chicken scratch?
I can.
Okay,
I can.
All the way to the top.
At the top, the grand opening of Ampersand. Ampersand AK, which was formerly the Skipping Stone.
Right.
Gallery.
They're having an open house, and there is new art in there. I was just talking to Amelia yesterday. Amelia and Andrea.
Right. So Amelia,
they have some
Amelia
new
Nash
stuff.
And Andrea Nelson.
Yep.
Correct.
Yes.
And yeah, I saw the paper up, and they were doing double secret design
the
in there.
Look great.
And then the brewery is showing work by Ari Marcourt.
Excellent.
Who's a homegrown local girl. Her mother's art is on the murals at the swimming pool, for example.
Okay. I didn't know that.
And around town, relatively too. So Ari, that will be lovely at the brewery. And the Sheldon Museum has Elemental Impressions, which is the things that are in their collection that aren't normally shown that were picked by the staff of some favorites just to sort of tell a story of a little bit of the arts in Haines and interesting objects and images from the collection. And Katie Craney, who we've talked about a lot, is making quite a name for herself all over the state and the world. It will be featured, the first Friday featured artist at the Arts Confluence, and on display will be her new work from her artist and residency in Iceland.
Iceland.
So that's pretty cool. And
we have the distillery has Anna Jurgelite.
Anna Jurgelite. Did I miss that? Yes. Anna is at the distillery, and those are photographs. Anna does micro things blown up, like beautiful flowers, and some of them are digitally enhanced, and she's got really a whole bunch of things going on, so that would be really neat. And I know there's more. I know Sarah Jay is doing some food.
Right.
I know the Arts Council is having a big event. They've got a band.
Oh, right.
And they're also starting at 6:30 instead
Stockholm
of 7:30. There's a string band, but they're doing pizza and refreshments in the lobby as a kind of preview. So if you're out and about at First Friday and you want to come to the Arts Council event and you're hungry, you can stop on by and get something to eat before you
go to the show. And the string band is going to be live on with us tomorrow during Backcountry at 2 o'clock.
Good. And then the other things that are happening, of course, coming up right?
Well, I just want to mention, I do think Alaska Rods is usually open during First Friday. I didn't get word if they have a feature artist. They're usually open.
Yes.
And if you need two dinners tonight, you could also grab a burger at the Legion before while you're walking around for First Friday downtown.
And those go to the scholarships, so that's always important. The other thing, too, is there are a lot of places that are open that we might not have the information on.
Exactly.
And Alaska Rods always participates, and I don't know exactly what they've got going right now. But it's just important to know that when you're – oh, the other one is the bookstore. I know the Babbling Book is open on First Fridays, and they have an upcoming signing later in the month with Dan Henry.
They do,
on
the 26th.
Yep, but they also have some new displays, and Darcy's working on, getting – the bookstore, giving it her own stamp a little bit. And so please stop in there.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. We'll be right back with your reader feature.
Yes, my reader feature. Speaking of books. Okay, so as you know, the show is Lynn Cannell Art Matters, all things art, and I'm a big fan of the literary arts myself, and reading and writing and those things, and I like to have someone from the communities on and talk about what books they're reading, and nothing necessarily, no pressure, not attached to anything that we're doing, but just curiosity to help us see how we read and what we read, and I thought, since today was the economic show, we would ask Tracy Harmon, the chief executive officer of the Haines Chamber of Commerce. It's a big title.
Yeah.
and of late, a famous actress who graced the stage of Jake's Women, a play that was done recently at the Chilcot Center. Anyway, Tracy, so tell us, books. What books would you recommend we read, or that have been most influential, or what are you reading now, or anything you feel like telling
us?
Well,
it's nothing about economics.
Not to put you on the spot.
No, it's nothing about economics or the Chamber of Commerce or business related. It's mostly very personal, actually.
Good. That's what we all do. I said last night,
yeah.
I said, I need a novel.
reading is about escaping for me. So kind of my history, I guess, with I've always been a reader, and I actually went to Bible college, where I majored in theology. So a lot of my college years and early adulthood were kind of, I guess you could say, forced reading. Mm-hmm. Into a lot of books on theology, philosophy, works on the Bible, reading books on books and chapters of the Bible.
So you're
I've kind of had my fill with that. That's not what I read anymore now.
So you're not one of those people. I always, you know, when I get stuck and someone asks me, you know, name the most influential books, and I always think, well, somebody always says the Bible and Shakespeare, and then I think,
nope,
really? Is that really, or is that, you know?
No, that was kind of forced reading, and it was very enlightening. So yeah, I kind of shy away now from self-help books, and or I shouldn't call the Bible a self-help book, but. I think my reading after college morphed into more spirituality, books on spirituality. One of my favorite authors is Paulo Coelho, the Brazilian novelist that wrote The Alchemist.
Uh-huh.
And one of my favorite books from him is actually The Witch of Portobello. I don't know if you've heard of that.
Okay, so write that down, folks.
The Witch of Portobello. It's about a woman who is kind of an outcast from the church and who ended up becoming a really great spiritual leader, but... Mm-hmm. Just on her own. She ended up having all these different gifts, but that were not welcomed into the church.
Okay.
So, yeah. And now, actually, the biggest genre of books I read are historical romance novels.
Really?
I'm a sucker for those.
So do you read...
Outlander.
Look at Margaret. Margaret, maybe. Do you want to jump in here,
no,
Margaret?
No, she can't. She'd get too heated.
So so what are your... click off some favorites. I don't read these that much.
I had to make a list.
Okay.
I had to go back and think of all
this
of my...
Great.
Favorites this past year, Into the Wilderness by Sarah Donati. It's actually, if you've seen the movie The Last of the Mohicans, it is a sequel to that, the characters. And it actually makes references to Jamie and Claire from Outlander. It's a really good one.
Okay.
Let's
Margaret
see.
Knows what you're talking about. I'm a little out of this one.
Some of my guilty pleasures are Judith McNaught. I just read The Kingdom of Dreams.
Okay.
It's about a Scottish laird Anything, yeah, anything historical romance and just total escapism. Scottish laird that falls in love with, she's actually captured by an English duke. So it gets really steamy.
So now, are you familiar at all with Lenora Bell?
No.
This is Haynes' own romance novelist who was actually featured in the Wall Street Journal about 2 weeks ago.
Okay.
She is, I don't know if I'm allowed to say her real name because she has a security clearance with the, she's a diplomat. She's a foreign diplomat, but on the side, she writes romance novels that are highly acclaimed, and they tend to have titles with the duke in them. There's always a duke.
It's always a duke.
It's always a duke, and and they take place. A lot of them are Elizabethan times. But
that's another author. Philippa
I think
Gregory.
She's on her.
I like her.
I love Philippa Gregory.
Yeah.
She's on her third or fourth or maybe fifth. Lenora is.
Oh.
But
okay.
They have them at the local bookstore in Haynes. They also have them at Skagway because she was a visiting author at Northwoods last year and is a graduate of Haynes High.
I really liked The White Queen.
I love Philippa Gregory.
Yeah.
And I can always read one of those for a long time.
What else have I? I'm a part of Book Club. I don't know if you guys have made any plugs to the Book Club that meets once a month, but some of my favorites from the past year have been The Marsh King's Daughter, which is not something that I normally would choose to
read. So now, which book club is this that meets once a month?
It's
is it the library one or
it's
is it
not the library?
So you're
one.
Just
Lexi DeWitt, yeah,
we've
Lexi
had
DeWitt.
Her
kind
of. This is what we call the Young Ladies Book Club.
The Young Ladies Book Club.
Oh my God.
Yeah, we've had some. We kind of get into the saucy books there.
There are several book clubs. I'm in the wise woman. our book club just read the Shaman's River.
The
we were talking about Dan Henry's new book.
Type book.
Okay. Anyway.
Let's see. I read the Nora Roberts. I like Nora Roberts. The Guardians trilogy. Me Before You. That was a heartbreaker I read earlier this year. And right now, I actually just started a really good book called The Secret Wife. It is a New York Times bestseller. I was up really late reading it. It is about the Romanov dynasty, and it kind of goes back and forth.
Like I heard an interview about this. I think there was an interview on NPR the other morning, Morning Edition,
really
and the idea of is she really the last princess
between
or
present
not?
Present time,
or the, yeah. Okay.
Kind of where before the whole family is executed.
They're
tracing back a lineage to this one English
Anastasia
author.
To see if she really was related.
It's Tatiana.
Tatiana.
It's Anastasia.
Oh,
so when I think that's why I like historical novels, because I always have my phone out and I'm like, is this really true or is the author just making
it
up?
I do that all the time.
Yeah.
Like when you're
I'm doing that right now watching The Crown.
I love
The Crown.
I do too.
I love it.
And I keep Google after every episode.
Yep.
I'm like,
the Jackie Kennedy episode?
Like, where's the castle? Did this really happen? Did she and Jackie meet for lunch? Anyway, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah.
Well, geez, Tracy, thank you very much for coming in. This was, I told you it's quick and it's informal and we're.
I do have to thank Tracy for turning me on to my guilty pleasures of some historical fiction recently in the last couple of years.
So I'm going to get one.
I greatly appreciate that.
It's
a lot of
you
fun.
You gotta escape and go somewhere.
I know,
why not?
Right? Yes. Yeah. And you know, really, I think that's one of the greatest things about reading. I mean, yes, I tend to sort of read what I call smart books and then pleasure books, and I mix them up sometimes. And I've been reading essays. You know, Marilynne Robinson, she's mind books, and those get so heavy. And so I said last night, even I was reading, I said to Jim, I need a novel. I need a good novel that I just am glued to for like 3 days.
Because I wish I could more educational books that were more relevant in my repertoire, but it is unfortunately after a long day and with children and everything, I just need to have a good
Tracy can hook you up
saucy.
With escapism.
I can. I have daughters that are also good readers that are always passing on good books to me.
Yeah.
So, yes. All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thanks, Tracy.
Well, now I got my head spinning. I got to get
that
the
was
secret
a bit of a
wife.
Whirlwind.
Tracy, she's wow. If yeah. that's any indication of how our economy's doing, it's good. It's vibrant,
sparkly
and vibrant. And now we have Mr. Bling himself, Tresham Craig.
Bling.
Tresham, I know that many people may hear your name associated with all kinds of things, but would you introduce yourself introduce yourself to our Art Matters and the Lynn Canal audience?
Okay. Well, I've been here a long time. I'm from here. My folks were artistic. Mm-hmm. They were some of the founders of the Port Chilkoot. And I've had my Seawolf Gallery in the parade field since 1980.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow I've managed to survive off of my art all these many years. Not to say that, you know, it's always easy or always totally remunerative. You know, you have your lean times. And of course, the changing of the seasons is very difficult. But you know, I've also done a number of things other than visual art. In a sense, I've done theater, mm-hmm. and dance theater, and now I'm doing puppetry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's a lot of places that you can go with all of these things if you put your mind to it. And you know, I'd like to say that being an artist really is a mindset, because you have to commit your whole life to it. You're always doing something for it. You know it's a life commitment. You're always at work.
So, Tresham, are you a self-taught artist? Where did you get your art education and also business education? Since you're both, you own three galleries,
well,
correct?
Yeah, and then by default.
And then the puppet.
Yeah. I was really an artist from birth. I drew when I was three, you know,
mm-hmm.
I was actually very fortunate to have, well, of course, my father was an artist,
mm-hmm.
and I would watch him, if nothing else, and mm-hmm. see that he could actually tackle just about anything.
And that would be Ted Gregg. That would
be Ted Gregg, yeah.
Did a lot of woodwork. And
he did. But, I mean, he also experimented into casting and, mm-hmm. and things like that. I mean, he had no boundaries in
mm-hmm.
a sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was also artistic, and they were both theatrically involved. But then I also was involved with the Chilkat dancers, the original group of Chilkat dancers. I was one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell you, that was an experience you cannot buy. It was so fantastic, because you learned not just the native art and the carving, but you learned sewing and design and costuming and mask dance theater and legends and how to travel and be with other people, work together. I mean, you know, it's like totally fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did go to college, but I studied architecture for quite a while, and then I studied fine art sort of on the side until I guess I met an architect and decided that maybe I didn't really want to be an architect after all. And so I went into fine art. And my first semester as a graduate student, I flunked because I tackled all these huge projects and they all failed. You know, I did a welded metal sculpture out in the yard of the art department, and I had a little crane that was holding it up, and I was, you know, welding it all together. It was old pieces of farm equipment and stuff. And then I finally got around to the point where I said, you know, I built the base at the bottom. And so I said, I'm going to take the crane off. And then, of course, I watched the sculpture just slowly crash to the ground, right? And another one, I was going to do this big mural painting of the Ghats of Benares. And, you know, I got the big panel, you know, big canvas and everything, but then I couldn't really do it. You know, it's just like, it was just beyond me. And several other projects like that. And so my sculpture instructor said, well, maybe you better find a different school. But then I went to UC Davis for a semester, and I studied with a New York artist named Paul Waldman, and he started us off very rigorously, like, render an egg white on white and place it on the paper. Well, some of the people never graduated from that particular
exercise. Right.
But, you know, then he went on, you know, we did figure drawing, we did composition, we did hard edge, we did color combinations, you know, all these things. And so he actually learned the whole bit.
So do you think then when I know like the art program at the Haynes School, for instance, is very rigorous, you know, that Linus Danner has a progressive program where, you know, you learn line and color and composition and all of these things that if you go through her program, by the time you graduate, you have been taught how to do art, how to draw, at least a basic, you know,
that's
how
fantastic.
To draw, how to do color. So that's that fundamental education could be one of the reasons why Haynes has so many young artists now, because of the confidence that they could probably, kids who graduate from her program could pass that egg drawing test.
Right. But then, of course, you have to, you know, figure out a way that you're going to make money off of the art.
Yes, and that's why we're here today. We're thinking that the season is gearing up and things are happening, and as the sort of the senior statesman of galleries in Haynes, I mean, was it as crazy to have a gallery here to make a living as it was when you put your sculptures up with the crane and they fell over? I mean, there must have been some trial and error here.
Yeah, you don't expect that you're going to make an instant success out of it, for sure. And, you know, here it's only a summertime industry, and then only if you get the tourists to show up. So, in fact, what happened to me was that, you know, I had the Seawolf in the parade fields, but nobody was coming to the fort.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the Star Dancer coming in out at Lutac. And they would bus all the people.
Which is a cruise ship that used to come here. That was the big one.
Yeah. And they would bus all the tourists downtown to go shopping. Well, I says, well, you know, I have to have a shop downtown.
So that's why you have the gallery downtown.
Well, actually, it was the Whale Rider that was. I rented a piece of property from Georgia Heisler, where the little coffee shop
right,
is
where
now.
Sarah Jay's is. Yeah. I've forgotten that.
Yes. And then I was there for 10 years, but I made it as a portable shop. In other words, it was structured and sized so that somebody could take their lowboy down there and pick it up and put it on it.
Just like your sculpture.
Yeah. And then move it. And in fact, that's what had
you
to
did.
Happen.
Yeah.
And so I moved that down to Porter Street. But in the meantime, the Uniquely Alaskan building, which was the Northern Arts Gallery, mm-hmm. Came up for sale. Pete Andreessen sold it to...
Ramsayer,
yeah.
Kurt
and then Ramsayer sold it to a couple of Canadian guys, and then they said, oh, well, you know, this was crazy. You know, we're going to sell it cheap. So had a couple of people that wanted to be partners in the gallery, and so we did that. But then, of course, when the ships all left town, they all abandoned shop. So
I have a question here, Tricia, because you do wear two hats. You're also on the Borough Assembly. You're involved in municipal government. You're a voice continually for sort of economic development, tourism. What are the things as you see it that the community can do to foster this art industry that maybe something that, you know, people can do?
Well, you know, it's all about marketing. You have to become a marketer, or somebody has to market it for you. Because, you know, here we only have like 3 or 4 months of tourist sales, and the community is very small, and so they don't really have, there's not really a customer base mm-hmm. for, you know, being an artist. So, you know, somehow we have to have a marketing scheme that's basically online. Online is pretty fabulous if you take it as a job, because you have to market online just mm-hmm. to get anywhere. And so, you know, I think that the community itself could actually have a website that marketed all of Haynes' artwork and tours and hotels and whatever. I mean, as an active marketing platform, mm-hmm. not just a passive one.
So, in other words, creating in in the general consciousness that this is an arts community. If you come here, you'll meet artists, see artists, be able to buy art. Because ultimately, the idea to support artists is you've got to buy it, not just look at it and like it. And
well, you can sell it online. Cool. You know, but Haynes has a great mystique, and so we have to put that mystique across at the same time that we're actually selling the product.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one thing, but, you know, I mean, there's any number of mediums that we haven't really explored.
What about simple things like, you know, as an operator of three shops, I mean, how important is it, you know, to get people in the door, to greet them, to your staff, the displays? I mean, it's a different part of the brain than just than creating the art, that whole, you know, like Laura was just here and talking about the labels and the interface of the creativity in doing something that's selling. And essentially, when you have a shop, that you're creating an environment where, yes, you want people to come in, but you also want them to leave with something. Do you have sort of different lines, some things that are more affordable than others? Do you have things that you target, you know, that are sort of the bread and butter of a business? If you're trying as an artist to, you know, sure, you might want to do whatever it is you do, big paintings or puppet shows or something, but if to make a living, it might be a pair of earrings that are the ones that you know everybody's going to buy.
Absolutely. But it's also very important to be interactive with the people that come in, you know, basically complimenting them and asking them questions and, of course, you know, maybe cracking jokes or having fun with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that they feel like this is kind of like a peak experience for them, and they both trust you and see the potential for your artwork in the future, and, you know, they're on board with you.
Now, what about the idea that I know, I think you do this in at least one of your galleries, I know, on the Fort property, but, you know, that people are actually doing their art.
Oh, absolutely.
In the studio and in the shop, there's some sort of creative process happening when people come in. Is that important?
It's very important. I mean, downtown, when Audrey's there, she's weaving.
Mm-hmm.
If Teresa's there, she's making jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
Annette's shop, she's usually painting something.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm carving something. And then I do puppet improvs with people whenever possible, too. Which is, you know, loads of fun for me anyways. But
not scaring them out the door. Who's that weird guy with the puppets? No, probably like,
you know,
it.
Only 10% of the people that come in your shop are actually buying. It's not like Mountain Market, you know, everybody buying something.
Is that true?
That's
formula,
what I think.
You think?
Yeah. And so, you know, you're constantly dealing with rejection.
Is that hard?
Yeah. But after a while, you get kind of used to it.
I guess it's the same when, you know, and I think about that as what is your advice? How about this? Your advice to consumers when they go into a gallery or walk by the tables at a bazaar, you know, where they know they have a finite amount of money to spend. They may already love that particular artist or thing, but they already have something from them. They're looking for a gift for someone specifically. I mean, how can those of us who support the arts behave when we go into shops, not just in Haynes, but in other places? What's your advice?
Just buy something.
Buy something.
You know, even if it's a little. But, you know, a lot of people will actually gush as they back towards the door, you know. So you just never know.
You never know. All right.
But there's a lot of challenges to being an artist. I have a whole list of them.
I bet you do. Well, we're going to grab Wendy, I think, is what's going to happen now. We're going to go to Skagway because we've only got 10 minutes left. But time flies, when we're having fun. So.
I know. Well, it's always fun to talk to you, Heather.
Yeah, and thank you. Thank you very much for coming in. And you added an insight, a historical one, and that it's possible to endure in this business as well.
Yes, but you have to accept the fact that you're not going to go from rags to riches.
As my husband says, his advice to artists is to marry well.
Oh, my gosh.
And it can go, that is not sexist because it could go any way you
want.
Oh,
I understand.
As long as you have a partner that understands. Well, it's also understanding the creative life as well,
that's
I think.
True.
That's true.
And the obsession with it. So, all right.
Thanks,
well, Tresham.
Thank you.
Well, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay, we're back on Art Matters on KHNS, and now we have Wendy from the convention, Skagway Convention and Visitors Bureau. Hello, Wendy.
Good morning, Margaret. Good morning, Heather.
Good morning, Wendy. It's nice to hear your voice.
Likewise. Thank you for having me on and giving us a chance to talk about some of the fun things we've got going on in Skagway's art community.
Yeah, well, what's happening? Because the Skagway Spring Festival, that's coming up in another 2 weeks, is that right?
Yep, it's going to be April 20th through 22nd, and it's a festival that's been built around a couple long-standing arts events that the Skagway Arts Council have held for years. Going back 32 years, Barb Callen, one of our long-standing arts supporters, started the International Folk Festival. And so this year is the 32nd year. It's going to be held at the Eagles Theater. And entry is going to be by donation, so everybody can attend. I know this is a tough time of year when people are ready to get out and about. They want to do something, but it's also a time when people don't have a lot of money. So a lot of the events we have going on in this weekend are low-cost or free events. So the Arts Council is doing the Folk Festival by donation, so everybody can get in there. And if you've got some artists in the area who want to participate, they are welcoming more musicians to attend. They can do a 3-song or 15-minute set, and they can just go to the Skagway Arts Council Facebook page to get details on that.
Right, this is I remember Barb organizing that after from the Alaska Folk Festival, and the artists that were going back up through Canada and, you know, to Whitehorse, and figured, why don't we capture a few? And certainly there's folks from Haines who also play that may want to, that haven't had their fill yet of performing and could go over and join you in the little mini festival.
Indeed, yeah. Barb kind of created it as a traveling show to go from Juneau to Skagway and up into Whitehorse even on Saturday night. So, yeah, it's definitely been a successful endeavor on her part.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then the other thing that the Arts Council started 10 years ago is a spring show of winter artwork. You know, as you guys are, I'm sure, familiar, arts is such an important part in Southeast Alaska's community. And, you know, Skagway has the second highest earning self-employed artists in the region. So this is an opportunity for both established artists and for newcomers who are doing their first art project to show off their work. We put just a big show on in the AB Hall, and so everybody can come in and see what everybody's been doing over the winter.
What kind of things do you normally have in that, or what kind of things have you seen from the previous years that people work on over the winter?
It's a huge array.
Yeah.
You know, we've had giant ivory sculptures from some of our established artists. We had a group in town called Skagway Rocks that's been doing rock painting, and so they brought in some of the work that they've done. We had one fellow who, over the course of the winter, nobody knew he was in his house, and he was building this elaborate tugboat that actually functioned. And it was just this amazing art piece that was, you know, he then took it down to Pullen Pond and put it in the pond, and it scooted along in the pond.
Wow.
So it's different every year, and it's just a wonderful showcase for our people who are doing cottage industry to show off what they're doing.
Great. And I imagine you get some visitors from Whitehorse for that weekend, or is it pretty homegrown?
Well, a combination of both. You know, this time of year, everybody's got a little bit of cabin fever, and in fact, sort of the what we call our festival is the Spring Festival, your cabin fever reliever, because everybody's ready to get out and just see something new. So we do get a fair amount of Whitehorse folks coming down, and they'll be camping in the campground or staying at, you know, taking advantage of the winter rates at our local hotels to stay here for a little extended weekend. So it's a good chance to just have that spring break before the season hits,
right, too. Right, kind of for, yeah, exactly.
So. Wendy, I want to go back to something that you said right at the very beginning, that you have the second highest number of artists per capita in terms of income into the community in Southeast. And I'm wondering what does Skagway do to help support local artists, especially when you also have many galleries and art shops that are owned from out of town as well. I mean, is there any kind of way that you help with that distinction for local people, or does it
Well, actually, there's a program that the Skagway Development Corporation started a few years ago called Made in Skagway, and that actually has gotten a lot of national recognition. In fact, it was featured in Disney's Onboard magazine. You know, people, when they're traveling now, they're not spending as much money on stuff, but they want more quality when they are buying things. And so we're promoting the notion that you can get, you know, unique items here. You can help support cottage industries here. You know, we have quite a lot of folks who put their first items into our show as a beginner and are now full-time artists. You know, I think Tamar Harrison of Tidal Drift is a great example of this. She started as a driftwood artist as a hobby, and after years later and a lot of practice, has developed into a pretty much full-time gig for her. So our seasonal economy also helps with that, in that people have the time in the winter to produce, and then in the summertime, of course, we have a large amount of visitors who come and are looking for unique items. So we really help promote the notion that, you know, rather than going for something that's a cookie cutter item, why not you purchase something that was made right here, you know, and promoting that notion. And I think that that's something that all of Southeast Alaska is really looking at, of promoting us as a creative community, as a creative region of the United States.
And now, Tresham Gregg, artist from Haines, was just in, and he, in his estimation, he estimated that only about 10% of the people who come into his gallery or a gallery actually purchase something. Do you think that's true in terms of Skagway, or do you think that, does that number sound about right?
You know, having run a bookstore for many years, I would say that probably is true in most retail places, you know, just because people are coming in, they're looking, they're making up their minds. But what that also isn't saying is, you know, how many phone calls you're going to get later ordering things. Yeah. Or, you know, as people are thinking about Christmas presents, oh, there was that unique thing that I saw in that store, because we field a lot of those kind of questions here at the Visitor Center. Mm-hmm. So even if people aren't, you know, purchasing right then at the store, it's always a good idea to make sure that you have a lot of presents for artists, to make sure that they have presence elsewhere, to have a Facebook page, a website, so that people can identify who they are. Because oftentimes when people are going into these stores, you know, they'll take a picture. I think I like that one.
Right.
And then they think about it, you know, and then they'll call back and order something. So just because they walk out the door doesn't necessarily mean you've lost the sale entirely.
Right. Wow, okay. Well, Wendy, we're almost out of time, but thank you for joining us this morning and letting us know about the Spring Festival and all sorts of other good stuff happening in the Skagway Arts community. So I'm sure we'll be checking in with you maybe next month or so and see what else is going on. Does that sound good?
That would be wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, Heather, we jammed.
I learned a lot, actually. Didn't you?
Yeah, we put a lot in that hour.
I think so. Yeah. I think so. And I do want to remind everybody that River Talk is coming up on April 19th at the Chit Chat Cafe, and the theme is Peak Experiences, Exhilarating Moments at Any Altitude.
All right.
Should we look into some historical romance?
Yeah. Those are peak experiences.
And that Dan Henry will be having a book signing at the Babbling Book and Dragon's Nook on April 26th. The Magical Mystery Tour Artist Studio Crawl, 9 to 4. And also Sunday, May 20th, way coming up, 4 to 7, the Chilkat Valley Artist Directory Celebration.
Excellent.
And that's going to be out at Bigsby's Barn.
Oh, fun.
New building.
That'll be fun.
But also, if artists want to be in that directory, to contact the Arts Confluence make sure you get your name listed.
Well, and I bet you and I will be back next month if we can before the next month's
we will.
Friday. All right.
We will. Of course
thanks,
we will.
Thanks, Heather.
Okay, thanks,
and
Margaret.
Thanks, everybody, for joining us here on Art Matters. You're listening to KHNS, Haines, Skagway, and Clequon.